Om Agnatum Anandasya Jana Jana Kalakaya Chaksi Simasandhya Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavishtam Stapitam Devintiya Swayam Prabhadamaya been reading the prayers of Lord Brahma. Again, Brahma is the most intelligent of persons within the universe, and therefore he naturally approaches, when he views reality, when he views the supreme truth, the absolute truth, he naturally approaches that through his intelligence, because he has, that's his opulence, that's his strength. And in these prayers, very much he's compared the process of bhakti through the process of approaching the absolute truth through the intelligence. Basically, and he will say it again and again, is that intelligence, or using the process of jnana, and this doesn't mean that one shouldn't get knowledge about Krishna, but using one's own intelligence to attempt to discern reality or the absolute truth, that we're calling jnana yoga, and that is also, that's jnana. Knowledge means jnana, or jnana means knowledge. And using that faculty to discern the absolute truth through the process of renunciation and meditation is called jnana yoga. And he compares this, Brahma compares that process with the process of bhakti or devotional service in these verses. And he's expressed many, many times that it is not actually possible to understand, uncover, have the absolute truth fully understood through the process of jnana, because regardless of how powerful our intelligence is, it is insufficient when it comes to the absolute truth. Rather, one needs devotion, which evokes Krishna's mercy, and by Krishna's mercy he will reveal himself. Therefore, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dharatya, to get out of the material world, material energy, one cannot use those things produced of the material energy. And after all, Bhumira Ponalovayu Kamano Buddha Evacha, the mind, the intelligence, whatever facilities we have, they are produced of the material energy. They are born of the material energy. And therefore they have the limitations of the material energy and the inability to reach to the platform of spirit, of spiritual energy, of this absolute truth. But devotional service, on the other hand, evokes the mercy of Krishna. It is a calling out for Krishna to bestow some grace upon a fallen soul who cannot arise to the highest platform through his own means. As long as we have the pride, and one could even call it the arrogance, to think or to rely on our own faculties, then why would Krishna give one mercy? Why will Krishna lend his hand? Because after all, we're thinking our own hand is sufficient. So even if one is sincerely trying to his own abilities, but sincerely trying, but he's just lacking an estimation of the limitation of his own abilities, then Krishna will keep an eye on such a person. And then gradually, when the person meets his limitation, when he bangs his head upon the ceiling of his own abilities, then Krishna will teach him through those experiences. So that's what he basically did with Brahma. Brahma tried through his own power to, because he was extremely powerful, he tried to use that power that he had to test Krishna's power, and the result was that he was trembling when he got a glimpse of how powerful Krishna was. And then he understood, he said it already and I'll say it again, that there is so much difference between my ability, which is limited, it is great, but it is limited. There is so much difference between my ability and your position, which is unlimited and unbounded, that he will conclude this chapter saying, other people may say they know something about the absolute truth, but I won't say that. I'll let them say what they want. But all I can say is, he is indescribably wonderful, indescribably powerful, indescribably beautiful, indescribably full of knowledge. And yet, within form, a person, characteristics, personality, likes, dislikes, but the absolute truth. This is the highest realization of the absolute truth. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Brahma continues in his prayers. We read the 25th of his prayers to Krishna, and 26, 27, 28, 29, and up to 29, they are continuing this topic of showing how one who is in the grip of the illusory energy of the Lord, his Maya, he has no ability, or he will mistake Krishna's position for something other than what Krishna is. So in 26, he explains a very quite interesting concept. The conception of material bondage and the conception of liberation. Material bondage and liberation are both manifestations of ignorance. Liberation and bondage are both ignorance. How could that be? Being outside the scope of true knowledge, they cease to exist when one correctly understands that the pure spirit soul is distinct from matter and always fully conscious. So we, or the spirit soul, has nothing to do with bondage or the desire to get liberation. If there is no bondage, then there's nothing to be said of liberation as a goal. Just like if I'm dreaming that I'm in prison, and the dream is, oh, I'm bound in prison and I can't wait to get liberated. I'm going to somehow I'll break out and get liberated. So is there any actual meaning to either being in liberated or bound within a dream? There is no meaning at all, because it's only a dream. It's only a dream. And actually, the person who is lying upon the bed at night has nothing to do with being in the prison, being bound, or being freed from the prison in his dream, because he has nothing to do with either of those. So that's what Brahma is saying here, because when one sees correctly, he understands that the pure spirit soul is distinct from matter and always fully conscious. When one sees correctly, when one looks at the person dreaming, he's in his bed and he's saying, please get me out of here, get me out of this prison, I can't take it anymore. And he's banging his hands. The person in the dream is thinking he's banging his hands against the bars. But the person watching him sees that he's only just hitting the pillow. And he sees, what is this dream he's having? He's not in prison. He just should wake up, get out of the illusion, see things in correct perspective. So at that time, when one is fully conscious or sees things in the correct perspective, bondage and liberation no longer have any significance. Because the soul, as described at the end of the second canto, Swapna Drashtamiva, it is like a dream. At that time, when one is awake, when one is free from illusion, when one is awakened from the dream, in the dream we think, I have this wonderful thing, I have that wonderful thing. And then I have this terrible thing. This terrible thing is happening to me. But when one's awake, for a few moments he remembers, I was just dreaming this and that, and then he gets on with his day, he gets on with his life. So when one is awake, his dreamlike bondage, his dreamlike liberation no longer have any significance. Just as day and night have no significance from the perspective of the sun. What an interesting example. Now, because we're so far from we're distant from the sun, it's night. Night has descended, the darkness has descended. And then tomorrow at about 6:15, it's light, or getting very close to getting light. And the light has come. So this type of day and night mood, I don't like the darkness, I don't like the heat of the day. This doesn't have anything to do with one when one is on the sun itself. There's no question of day and night when one's on the sun. So similarly, when one is with Krishna, when one has achieved that, then there is no question of thinking liberation is valuable. So that is what Brahma is actually saying here. He's saying that most sages, most people are longing for liberation. Why do people long for liberation? Because they are so tired of the suffering of life. But this is a suffering man's desire. It is not the desire of someone who is pure, free, and happy. The suffering man, the dreaming man in prison, desires to end this terrible dream, be awake. But the person who is free, happy, the person who is with Krishna actually has no desire for such illusory things, such as liberation. What to speak of desiring things in the realm of matter. Here is the purport here. Material bondage is illusion because the living entity has no real relationship with the material world. Because of false ego, the conditioned soul identifies himself with matter. Therefore, so-called liberation is simply the giving up an illusion rather than release from actual bondage. So it's in the dream. He doesn't get released from the prison house in his dream. He just wakes up. He gives up the illusion that he's in prison altogether. Yet even if we think that the suffering of material illusion is real, and that liberation is thus a meaningful release from suffering, the mere absence of material existence is still insignificant compared to the achievement of factual spiritual life, which is the positive eternal reality opposed to the negative illusion of material life. Ultimately, Krishna consciousness, or pure love of Godhead, is the only significant, meaningful, and permanent status for every living entity. Since the darkness of night is caused by the absence of the sun, One would not expect night within the sun itself, nor would one expect individual days separated by nights. Similarly, within the pure living entity, there is no material darkness and thus no experience of liberation from such darkness. When the conditioned soul comes to this platform of pure consciousness, he becomes fit to associate with the supreme pure, the personality of Godhead himself, in the Lord's own abode. And read the comment of Sanatana Goswami to this 26th text. It's part of the comment. Pointing out that the transcending of material existence is very insignificant, the fact that liberation is not the ultimate goal of life is stated in the verse beginning Ajnana. They are not separated. When the unalloyed pure supreme, who is eternally situated in knowledge, the reality of the supreme self beyond material existence is studied, when Krishna is studied, then, just in the same way as bondage is false, by such investigation, liberation is also found to be false. In that connection, example it is stated. Just as in the sun there is no night and no day also, the perception of which would be based on making a distinction of the sense of night. Rough copy, sorry, that was hard to understand. There's no, without the concept of day, there is no concept of night. Without the concept of bondage, there is no concept of liberation. Without jail, there is no concept of being, thinking, oh, I want to get free. So similarly, once one understands that there is no true bondage for the soul, that there's no actual suffering, it's his identification with the material, with his material body and material mind that causes the suffering. Once that is understood, then both, that means his bondage is understood to be false, and therefore the concept of liberation also loses its meaning. In this way, the implication is that liberation, being merely the absence of material existence, is insignificant, and therefore it does not constitute the achievements of the goal of life. There is something far more wonderful than that. Text 27. So, influenced by illusion, one may think in terms of bondage and liberation. And influenced by illusion, a foolish person won't understand that there is nothing supreme to your personality, Brahma is going to tell Krishna to you. Just as the foolishness of those ignorant persons who consider you to be some separate manifestation of illusion. So there are some people when they have an impersonal conception of what the absolute truth is, what the supreme reality is. They have an impersonal conception. So when they think of the absolute truth being a person, what to speak of Krishna, a specific person with specific characteristics, they think that that conception of God is okay. You can think about that because you're childish in your spiritual realization. You think about that, you chant a mantra to focus the mind on one point. You worship Krishna, you worship a deity to focus your mind at one point, but ultimately give up that one-pointedness and understand the nothingness that is supreme. That's the way that they think. So, just see the foolishness, Brahma says, of those ignorant persons who consider you to be some separated manifestation of illusion. So such people, they're so foolish, because Brahma has just seen Krishna perform the most amazing feats, manifest unlimited cows and boys and unlimited Vishnu forms and unlimited universes. He's seen how all these have come out from Krishna's body and then re-entered into Krishna's body. And he understands the actual nature, the transcendental spiritual nature of Krishna's body, that it is not a product of illusion at all. So those people who think that there's something other than Krishna that's supreme, and who consider the self, which is actually you, to be something else, the material body, and then when they think of their own self to be the material body rather than a manifestation of Krishna, such fools conclude that the Supreme Soul is to be searched for somewhere outside your Supreme Personality. They look at Krishna and they say, where is the absolute truth, the unborn, unmanifested within Krishna? Like that was very famous when Prabhupada, before his Bhagavad Gita, as it is, was published, when he was reading to the devotees and lecturing in 1966, 1967, and the first part of 1968, he was reading from the translations of Dr. Radhakrishnan's, who was the first president of India and was a Sanskrit scholar, his version of the Bhagavad Gita. And he would undoubtedly become quite upset because Krishna would say in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that you focus your mind on me. Krishna is speaking this and he says, focus your mind on me. Not me, Burijan, but Krishna is speaking it. He's saying, focus your mind on me. And what Dr. Radhakrishnan writes in his comment is what Krishna really means is not to focus your mind on me, on him, but to focus your mind on the unborn, unmanifest within him. So Prabhupada would become very upset at that, because don't listen to what Krishna is saying. You listen to what I am saying. I know better than Krishna. There's such arrogance in that. Krishna is saying, focus your mind on me, manmana, bhava mad bhakto, madhyasi namaskuru. And the commentator is saying very untransparently, you just do the opposite of what Krishna says. Like if I say, just imagine how frustrating it would be for me if I say, Jason, could you hand me a flower? And then Jason picks up the flower and hands it to Krishna Lila or someone. And I say, no, but please give it to me. And, oh yes. What you really mean is not give it to you. I have a better idea. So what would happen? You're fired. Go. You're not. So don't worry. So anyone who thinks that there's something more supreme than Krishna, that this is like Krishna, that person is a preliminary understanding to a deeper, greater, more internal, more universal understanding. This is called foolishness, ignorance, and illusion. This is Brahma's words. And again, he's the most intelligent. He's just learned this. He's learned it by confronting the fact that by confronting Krishna's all-powerful position and being defeated by it. So he's learned this directly. Here's the purport. Lord Brahma is amazed at the gross ignorance of conditioned souls who consider Lord Krishna's supreme spiritual body to be material. This, by the way, is the Mayavad philosophy. They consider that the absolute truth is Brahman. It is spiritual, qualityless energy. But then when it comes to the material world, influenced by the mode of goodness, matter, it appears as Ishvara, or an incarnation of the Lord, as God. But actually, ultimately, the absolute truth is formless. So this is the foolishness. This is Mayavad philosophy. Ignorant of the spiritual form of the Lord, such persons also consider their own material bodies to be the self. And therefore they conclude that spiritual reality is to be found somewhere beyond the Supreme Personality of Lord Krishna. Sometimes such fools consider Lord Krishna to be one of many individual souls who together constitute a single impersonal spiritual entity. Unfortunately, such speculators are not inclined to hear from the Lord himself or from the Lord's authorized representatives, such as Lord Brahma. Because they whimsically speculate on the nature of the Supreme, Their ultimate result is confusion and ignorance, which they euphemistically describe as the mystery of life. Euphemistically describe, this means that you're saying one thing, but you actually mean another. So they're saying, they call it mystery of life, but it's actually another word to say confusion and ignorance. Opposite meaning. But not the opposite meaning we were looking for the other day. Often pejorative. We'll read also the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment here. Some of his comment. Text 27. Though Brahma prayed, those who think they are knowledgeable of spiritual things, but actually are not, do not respect your transcendental form in Vrindavan and Braja. As previously mentioned, such persons are simply beating empty husks of rice. They think your supreme spiritual body is material, another manifestation of illusion. They consider the self, which is actually you, to be something material. Thus they search for the Supreme Soul elsewhere. Just see the ignorance of these foolish people. Because they're missing the opportunity to know and love Krishna. So someone, such as Brahma, who is standing before Krishna. Someone such as Srila Sanatan Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. To the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, their hearts would crack to see people fooled by this impersonal, fooled, bewildered, bewitched by the impersonal understanding. And it would shake them with very, very strong words. It is said that when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would see a Mayavadi sannyasi or something walking down a street, or at least I don't know if he did it every time, so, but otherwise he probably wouldn't get from one place to the other. But he would cross the street and chastise him. Why are you fooling people with this Mayavadi nonsense philosophy? Why are you fooling people, cheating people with this? You're cheating them, because once one thinks that the Absolute is impersonal, that calamity, then it is very difficult for the seed of devotion, of true devotional service, to sprout within the heart. Just see the ignorance of these foolish people. Text 28. Brahma continues. O unlimited Lord, the saintly devotees, this is in contrast to the foolish who want something beyond Krishna, the saintly devotees seek you out within their own bodies by rejecting everything separate from you. Indeed, how can discriminating persons appreciate the real nature of a rope lying before them until they refute the illusion that is the snake? So the saintly devotees, the foolish people, they see Krishna directly in front of them and they want something else. Even though Krishna is right in front of them, they want something else and they want to look beyond Krishna. But the saintly devotees, pure souls, everywhere they look, they reject everything but Krishna. And they're only looking for Krishna, the Supreme Person, and they want nothing else. This is called sincerity or purity. Very hard to find this kind of sincerity and purity in this world. One who is able and desiring to reject everything but Krishna. and accept everything favorable for his devotional service and reject everything unfavorable. Who is so sincere and so surrendered and so focused? Vyavya satmika buddhi ikeha kurunandana, like a laser. Such a person will make very rapid advancement in spiritual life. So this verse is another one that's spoken in Gyan terms. The saintly devotees seek you out within their own bodies by rejecting everything separate from you. Indeed, how can discriminating persons appreciate the real nature of a rope lying before them until they refute the illusion that it is a snake? So illusory things have to be rejected to actually make progress in the positive. The purport here. One may argue that a person should cultivate self-realization at the same time pursue sense gratification for the material body. One may not argue that, but this is generally what people do. Cultivate self-realization at the same time pursue sense gratification for the material body. This proposition is herein refuted by the example of misidentifying a rope as a snake. One who mistakes a rope for a snake becomes fearful, and he thinks of the so-called snake. But upon discovering that the so-called snake is actually a rope, he experiences a different emotion, relief, and then can ignore the rope. Similarly, because we misunderstand the material body to be the self, we are experiencing many emotions in relation to the body. Upon discovering, however, that the body is simply a bag of material chemicals, we carefully note how this illusion was created and then lose interest in the body. Discovering that we are actually an eternal soul within the body, we naturally focus our attention on that real self. So this again is spoken in a jnana type of way. Because the devotees, they don't lose interest in the body, even if they are extremely realized that they are not the body. Rather, they lose interest in identifying the body as the self, and then they use the body in Krishna's service. Just like if a pure person has a car, he doesn't lose interest in the car, nor does he think himself, I am this car, and everything, that little thing that happens to the car, the good and the bad, are happening to me. He doesn't have that kind of identification. But on the other hand, he just uses it in Krishna's service. He cares for it, doesn't lose interest in it. He cares for it quite nicely, but for Krishna, for his service. This is a pure soul. So those who are saintly and wise always cultivate Krishna consciousness, spiritual knowledge, having transcended the foolish misidentification of the body as the self. Such Krishna-conscious persons go on to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who dwells within the material body as the Supersoul, the witness and guide of every living entity. Realization of the Supersoul and the individual soul is so pleasing and satisfying that a self-realized person automatically gives up everything irrelevant to his spiritual advancement. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, first Sanatana Goswami. 28. Saintly persons, on the other hand, different from the foolish people who are rejecting Krishna for something beyond Krishna, saintly persons seek you out, seek Krishna out, who are present both externally and internally as all pervasive. This is stated in the verse meaning anta, or unlimited one. O you who have no boundary, or in other words, O you who are all pervasive both internally and externally. To the saintly persons, your devotees, on the other hand, seek you out within their own bodies? Such is expressed ironically. No, indeed, rather they look for you externally also. How? By giving up whatever is separate from that. Whatever is false by nature and falsely thought by the non-devotees to be the self. The devotees do this because without such renunciation, perfectly pure knowledge cannot arise. That's an important lesson. Bearing this idea in mind, are spoken the words beginning ashantam. Antarena means without negating that illusion. With the understanding of I am not him, I am not the supreme, but I am his. First of all, discarding the false understanding of oneself as the Lord, the devotees are thus able to achieve you. So the first thing is one has to give up the conception that I am the supreme. There's no progress if one is thinking like that. Or the idea is that cessation of that which is separate from the absolute truth, that which is unreal, and then one can give up those things based on the false conception that I am not the supreme, I'm not the enjoyer, I'm not, in the spiritual sense, I'm not the supreme, and in this material world, I'm not the center of existence. Then one can renounce those things that tend to make one think one is the center. Without rejecting the insubstantial, it is not possible to realize the true substance, as stated by the word ashantam. Without the renunciation of sense gratification and so on, without the renunciation of karma, jnana, and so on, remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be achieved. The rest is to be explained in the same way as Srila Sridhar Swami has said. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Brahma prayed. The jnanis think that your form is an attribute of Maya. Your saintly devotees, the Shanta, however, seek out the pure form of the living entity, the jiva, free from the covering of Maya. By rejecting that which is material, not spiritual, they seek out the jiva which takes birth amongst countless species in various bodies. To reject everything material, one must first reject the false conception that I am my material body. Next, the procedure is mentioned. Brahma continued, how can one appreciate the real nature of a rope lying before him until he refutes the illusion that it is a snake? In the Vedas, it is said, asangoyam purusha, the soul has nothing to do with this body. Thus, the jiva has no bodily suffering. But due to ignorance, the jiva identifies with his body and thus experiences various miseries. Without rejecting everything related to the body, one can realize his spiritual identity by just cultivating transcendental knowledge? No. One cannot know the soul without rejecting all attachment to the material body. Very sober. Bhajan kore, sadhan kore, mrityu janle hoy. That a Bengali saying that Prabhupada would quote, saying that you may be a great devotee, you may be able to speak very nicely, but the test of your sadhana, your practice, and your bhajan, your worship, is at the time of death, what you're actually attached to, and how much you identify with the material body as yourself, or do you identify yourself as Krishna's, and go and just leave. So that's the procedure, detachment. Text 29. So how can one actually know Krishna? The searching for him, these processes, what shouldn't one do? Now Brahma's going to say something about how one can know him. And he's saying this from his own experience. And Krishna is known by him. And indeed, Krishna is standing right before him. My Lord, he says, if one atapite deva padam bhuja dravya prasara leshanu anugrihita evahi janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno nachanya eko pi chiram vachinvan. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. If one relies on his speculative intellectual abilities, they may study and study different Vedic scriptures for years and years and years, but they will remain unable to know you, Brahma says. But one who gets even the slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet can understand the greatness of your personality. This is also what Gopinath Acharya said to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya first met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He couldn't recognize him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Gopinath Acharya knew that Mahaprabhu was, so he said this. He said that you will understand if you can get just the tiniest bit of the mercy of the Lord, then you will understand. We'll read the comment of Sanatana Goswami and then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And that will be the end of this very strong section of Brahma's prayers, and then it takes a shift. Sanatana Goswami says, "Your greatness is evident, nevertheless, it can be only experienced by your grace." And such is spoken in the verse beginning, Atapi. That's the 29th verse. Atapi means therefore. Therefore, apite deva padam bhuja dvaya. Apite, atapi, therefore indeed, te, your, deva, my lord, the lord, your two lotus feet, by the mercy of the prasada of your lotus feet, by only a trace, lesha, one can understand you just by a trace, a slight bit of mercy from your lotus feet. O Deva, O illuminator of everything, or O you who manifests everywhere, or the Lord is dressed as Deva in the sense that he is playing, divyati, always within Sri Vrindavan. Or the word Deva is thus an adjective describing his lotus feet. Prasada means satisfaction or mercy, being favored by a trace of that. Or prasada means Mahat Prasada of Tulsi, and so on, in relationship to him. So if one gets the favor of these things, who's an example of someone who got the trace, the lesha, the favor, a trace of the favor of Tulsi? And got it. The four Kumaras, the breeze carrying the fragrance of Tulsi from the Lord's lotus feet and the sandalwood went into their nostrils, and they immediately became converted. They had a conversion experience from being jnanis into being devotees. The word he expresses certainty. O Bhagavan, O you who are eager to manifest your personal qualities of compassion and so on, such as to be deduced as the reason for his mercy. What is the reason for his mercy? Whoops. Yes, compassion. Yes, personal qualities such as compassion. Or, because previously the topic under consideration was devotional service, although coincidentally there was presented the refutation of various false arguments, still in each and every verse devotional service has been prayed for. Thus the greatness mentioned here should be understood as that characterized as devotional service. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse. Brahma prayed, "Only by Krishna bhakti is it possible for the living entity who has disregarded his material coverings to realize the bliss of Brahman. Being blessed with a particle of mercy from your lotus feet, you can understand the greatness of your personality. Matsya Avatar says, Madayam mahimamam cha param rameti sabditam. Advised and favored by me, you will know everything about my glories." So this is really the process of bhakti. Don't, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, don't try and see Krishna. Don't try and see Krishna. Why? Because it's not possible to see Krishna unless he reveals himself to you. So therefore, don't try and see Krishna, but just act in such a way that Krishna will see you and give you some mercy. This is the point here. And the Matsya avatar said, you will know everything about my glories when you are favored by me. And they will which are known as the Parabrahma, because they will manifest within your heart. Sridhar Swami explains this verse as follows. By Krishna's mercy, one can know the Supreme Brahman. To obtain a particle of the Lord's mercy means that the jnani performed mixed devotional service previously. The Lord bestows the mercy of bhakti yoga to that jnani who, giving up avidya and vidya, knowledge and ignorance, accepts pure bhakti. However, one who gives up bhakti in preference to jnana and enthusiastically pursues Brahman, though he is a guru for thousands of jnanis, studies scriptures and practices yoga for a long time, he will never know the true nature of the Lord. So Brahma has concluded his basic, on one, the philosophical part of his prayers, and he has 10 more verses of prayers, or 11 verses, 30 to 40. And he's just, and in these verses, he's going to glorify the resonance of Vrindavan, because he's saying, Krishna is so impossible to understand. I'm so powerful, in fact, relatively to other persons in the material world, but Krishna is so impossible to understand. But yet, these resonants of Vrindavan are interacting with you in such an intimate way. They surpass everything that anyone can conceive of in relationship with the Absolute Truth. It's so fully intimate. And that's the speciality of Vrindavan. It's so intimate. The dealings with the Absolute Truth, with God, with the Supreme Person out of Godhead, with Krishna, are completely intimate. So how? Krita punja punja, sakyam vicharu krita punja punja. How much piety and purity do these personages have? So Brahma is going to start his prayers glorifying the resonance of Vrindavan. So these are, in one sense, these are his actual conclusion. I'll read one verse. So this is his realization about Krishna. My dear Lord, I therefore pray, this is what he wants after confronting Krishna's incredible and unlimited power. I therefore pray to be so fortunate that in this life as Lord Brahma, or in any other life, wherever I take my birth, I may be counted as one of your devotees. I pray that wherever I may be, even amongst the animal species, even if I have to take my birth as an animal, I can engage in devotional service to your lotus feet. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has a comment over here. Let's see. Read Sanatana Goswami's comment first, and we'll read Vishwanatha's end. Sanatana Goswami says, your prasada is achieved. Your prasada means your mercy is achieved when one has servitude towards you. When one has a mood of service to you. Thus Brahma, so that's how to attain the mercy, because the previous verse said one understands when one gets even a particle of mercy. So how to get that mercy is the next question, and the answer is, Sanatana Goswami says, when one has servitude towards you, thus Brahma prays for such servitude in the verse beginning, tat. O Nata, O fulfiller of all desires, that fortune of mine to have achieved the highest perfection in the material world is not the greatest fortune, but rather that would be Buribhaga, Mahadbhaga, which means that it would be the best good fortune for me, your eldest son, is if I have this position of servitude towards you. It is not my obsession to take birth in a species that is unfavorable for devotional service, such as the insects, animals, and so on. But rather, I desire to take birth in the womb of your devotee. And it is such that is indicated by the word here or elsewhere. The rest has been explained by Sridhar Swami. Or your satisfaction is achieved only by rendering full service to your devotees. And thus Brahma prayed in the verse beginning with Tat. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Krishna said, O Brahma, crest jewel of all knowers of sadhana and sadhya, of all knowers of practicing goals, what is your desire after describing jnana and bhakti in your prayers? Consider carefully, Brahma, then pray for the most valuable thing. Indicating himself as a servant, Brahma replies to Sri Krishna, O Master, O Nata, yes, I have discerned the most auspicious thing of all, the Buddhibhaga. Whether I get a high birth as Lord Brahma, Bhava Atra, or a low birth as a deer, Tiraskam, for many births, with no chance for liberation, since I will lose the opportunity to attain bhakti, I pray to take birth as one of your devotees, either advanced or neophyte. And then Vishwanath says, from the 31st verse, that was the 30th verse, to the end, which is, I believe it's the 40th verse of his prayers. Yes. From the 31st verse, Brahma, having submerged in the ocean of Krishna's sweetness, praises the devotees immersed in Vatsalya rag, parental love, and other intimate relationships with the Lord. So that's what he's going to do, because he feels so distant and he's seeing the glory of those who have an intimate relationship with Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Hare Krishna. So tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall also dive into the sweetness of Brahma's realization of the fortune of the residents of Vrindavan. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.